Before we start, we want to let you know that this podcast will include topics like child abuse and neglect. There will also be some strong language.
So as she shows up, I am already sitting here making the report to the police that I intended to make anyway, and I'm showing him this video. And she comes walking up, still don't know her name, still don't know anything. And she says, she's whispering something to the cop, and I'm like, I don't even know who this woman is. And he was like, well, she does work for Athens County Children's Services. I'm like, okay, did you see the video I just showed you? He's the one that should be being arrested right now. Nobody has done anything to harm any of my children. And she's telling me, well, I have a court order from the judge stating that I have to take all of your children now and put them in foster care.
Teresa Fogel is standing in her neighbor's driveway, watching as a caseworker from Athens County Children's Services takes her two young daughters. The caseworker shows up with Teresa's two sons already in her car. Teresa's just been told that a judge has given the agency an order to remove her children.
And I'm like, for what? Under what evidence do you have to take my children from me? My girls were with me. They were fine. Josiah is the one that needs to go to jail.
The caseworker just hands her a business card.
On the back of it, she wrote, court at 1 p.m. on June 27th.
The woman drives off with all four of Teresa's kids. She stays in the driveway for a while.
And I'm sitting there like, what in the world is going on?
Just 1 month earlier, Teresa moved her family to the small town of Gloucester, Ohio, to get them out of what she felt was a bad environment. She thought it would be the start of a new life for all of them. Now, she's standing there alone. Her kids are gone. She doesn't know when she'll see any of them again.
I came here for a fresh start, to get out of a city, to get my kids away from all that crap. I came here, and then my life has turned into a complete nightmare.
Most stories about child removal cover situations where an agency should have taken kids out of a home but didn't. These are the cases where kids suffer devastating abuse and no one does anything until it's too late. They're the stories that make headlines and stir public outrage. But critics say the child welfare system has a much bigger problem that isn't getting reported. Cases like Teresa's, where children are removed based on allegations that don't warrant such an extreme intervention or that just lack evidence.
Critics say this happens all the time, and there's almost nothing most parents can do about it. They just have to wait and hope that one day they'll get their children back. And it's not just the parents who suffer. Studies have found that the average outcomes for children in the system are worse than for those who remain at home, even if their parents are truly abusive.
We followed Teresa's story for 8 months. Alongside Teresa, we learned how the system works, where it fails, and how it could potentially change for the better. And we found out something disturbing. Even if children are removed for totally made-up allegations, it could still take months for them to come home. That's just the way it works.
I'm David Forster.
And I'm Teo Peck Suzuki. And this is 150 Days from WOUB. Our part in this story begins with an email from Teresa in the middle of summer in 2022. Roughly 30 days from the scene we described with the car.
Our general manager, Mark, forwards me an email Teresa sent to WOUB. It is long, just one huge block of text you have to scroll and scroll to read.
David's not entirely sure what to make of it. I mean, it's clear she's upset, but we have no idea at this point whether anything she's saying is true. So he asks me, because this is my beat, whether I want to follow up on it. And I'm like, yeah, why not? David offers to tag along, since he kind of gets the idea that it might be a lot for one reporter.
So we schedule an interview with Teresa, and she shows up with a huge stack of documents.
So, where would you like me to begin?
It becomes clear pretty quickly that she is desperate to share her story with someone.
So I appreciate you guys doing this for me, because nobody else will listen to me.
To understand what happens to Teresa and why it matters, we have to go back to before she came to Gloucester. We have to go way back to 2004. She marries a man named Blake Fogle. She's 18, he's her first love, and they have two kids together, Josiah and Azriel.
Remember the kids' names. Josiah, the oldest, Azriel, his younger brother.
Right, Josiah and Azriel. Now, Blake struggles with drug addiction and has violent outbursts.
I was young, but we had a history. Like, I was 14 when me and Blake got together. He was 16. I was young, stupid. You know, we all make stupid decisions.
So in 2008, this is 4 years after they get married, Teresa leaves him.
I was like, you know what? I deserve way better than this, and my children deserve way better than this, and I'm done.
Teresa and Blake divorce in 2009. A year later, she gets together with a guy she's known since childhood named Justin Johns. They move into an apartment, then rent a home together for several years. In 2018, Justin buys a house in the suburbs of Butler County, and they move there.
What this means is that Teresa always has a place to live. That's something that will be important later.
Along come two more kids, Ryland and Everly.
So now there are four kids overall. The two boys, Josiah and Azriel, and the two girls, Ryland and Everly.
And if you remember how we started the story, it's these four kids who get taken. But these aren't the only kids Teresa winds up raising. In 2017, her ex-husband's sister leaves her infant son Dylan with Teresa.
He was dropped off to me when he was 5 weeks and 4 days old.
The sister is struggling with drug addiction, and she just doesn't come back.
Teresa winds up being awarded custody of Dylan by a judge. And this is important because for that to happen, Butler County Children's Services needs to be on board. That means lots and lots of home visits.
Every month, for 3.5 years, Karen Wisniewski from Butler County Children's Services came to my house. And it was either scheduled or wasn't scheduled. She would show up when she wanted.
Meaning her home has been closely inspected and approved by child welfare workers.
Which makes what happens later all the more surprising.
So now there are five kids.
Josiah, Azriel, Rylan, Everly, and Dylan.
And that's still not all. There's another kid, this one in her teens, who gets placed with Teresa.
This is Demi, and she's Teresa's half-sister, meaning she's Josiah and Azriel and Rylan and Everly's aunt, despite being just a year older than Josiah. And she's still under 18, so she gets placed with Teresa, which requires another home study.
So we're up to six kids, two of whom the child welfare system has placed with Teresa. Then, in 2020, Justin and Teresa break up. But Justin doesn't kick her out.
Well, not right away.
Not right away. That's important.
He threatens to, but he doesn't. And Teresa manages to keep things together for a couple years. She's still living at Justin's house, even though he moved out.
And that brings us up to April 2022. We are now about 2 months away from the removal. And what happens in April is going to explain why Teresa ends up on the other side of Ohio 2 months later, watching her kids get taken away.
First, Teresa finds out that Josiah and Demi are in a romantic relationship.
So that is Teresa's oldest son and her half-sister, both of whom are teenagers.
Now, we did reach out to Josiah and Demi. Josiah declined to comment, and Demi didn't respond to multiple messages. But it's Teresa's belief they are indeed in a relationship. And obviously, that is not going to fly.
So a caseworker came to my house, and she sat down with all of us. We all had a group family meeting.
After the meeting, Azriel has a bit of a meltdown and starts fighting with Josiah and Demi. He's upset about the relationship. Josiah claims Azriel held a kitchen knife to his throat.
We should note, Azriel and Teresa later say this isn't true, but regardless, things have kind of gone off the rails.
They've kind of gone off the rails. Azriel spends a night in juvenile detention.
He didn't understand it. Nobody understands it. Azriel should have not went to jail that night, but I didn't know what might happen if I didn't put him there.
Teresa picks him up the next day, and the charges are dropped. But things are far from okay.
Teresa is furious with Josiah. At one point, she texts her mom, quote, "I want him out of here. I need someone to help me," all caps, "before something bad happens." She feels Josiah is lying to protect his relationship with Demi, that he's lied about Azriel, his younger brother, attacking him with a knife. Teresa has sent Demi to stay somewhere else, but Josiah and Demi are still communicating, and Teresa has no idea what to do.
Teresa catches Josiah on the phone with Demi and breaks his phone. That prompts Josiah to slam the door on Teresa's foot, hard enough to leave a bruise. And Teresa presses charges on him. Now Josiah is in juvenile detention.
And in the midst of all this, Teresa has another problem. Remember, Justin has been threatening to evict Teresa since they broke up. Well, in April, he finally makes good on his threat. So now Teresa's getting evicted, her oldest son is in juvenile detention, and she decides, I need to get my family out of Butler County. She signs a lease for a house on the other side of Ohio. When she returns home, she has a hearing in Josiah's case.
I was like, look, I'm going to drop the charges because we're moving almost 3 hours away. I'm getting my children out of here. We're going to go start fresh in this new place. I'm going to get them in counseling there. And he's going to be away from the drugs and my sister and from all of this. He's not going to have the opportunity to get in trouble like he has been here.
And the place they're moving to is...
Gloucester, Ohio.
Compared to the suburbs where they currently live, Gloucester is pretty small, about 1,600 people. It's an old coal mining town in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, surrounded by forest. Teresa's a nature lover, and she thinks, maybe this is exactly what my boys need. So they load up a U-Haul, and on May 24th, 2022, they drive to their new home.
By the way, her nephew Dylan, he goes back to stay with his mom, who's in recovery and is holding down a job. So it's Teresa, her four kids, Josiah, Azriel, Rylan, Everly, and one other person, Tyler Tingley, Teresa's new boyfriend.
When I signed the lease, I had asked the property manager if a few things could be done. There was no lock on the back door. It was wide open. There was no deadbolt, no doorknob, no lock.
There ain't no doorknob?
No.
On the back door?
No.
So what was holding it closed?
A 2x4 and cinder blocks.
When Teresa and her family arrive at the house, they realize the property manager has not fixed the door or done any of the other things Teresa asked for.
I requested there be either a new door or locks put on that door. I requested that there be locks on windows that didn't have locks, that windows that were glued shut be unglued and able to securely lock. I asked that the trash be removed from the front and the back of the residence and that the grass be mowed. So it was just minor things. There was also two dead rats on the floor.
None of that is fixed. So Teresa calls the property manager.
And I'm like, you told me X, Y, and Z is done, and it is not done. She started using excuses saying that, oh, well, they had to let go of their maintenance guy. And he said that he did this and that, and he didn't do this and that. And at that point in time, my boyfriend was like, well, I need a job. They hire him as the maintenance man, right on the spot.
Teresa claims the landlord offered Tyler, her boyfriend, $12,000 a month.
Which seems like a lot.
It seems like quite a lot. Too good to be true a lot. But they're thinking, new place, new job, everything is looking up. There's just one problem. Tyler and Teresa have to pay the maintenance expenses out of pocket. That obviously won't be an issue once they get that first $12,000 check. But right now, they don't have much money.
And this is in rural southeast Ohio, where most of the landlord's properties are at least a half-hour drive away. So they're paying for gas, paying for materials. The landlord pays for some of it too, but Teresa and Tyler are still burning through their savings very quickly. They run out of money after just a few weeks and cannot pay the rent. It's mid-June, and Tyler won't get his first payment until July. The landlord says he won't pay them until they pay their rent.
Now, Teresa's resourceful. So she goes to legal aid and gets an attorney. Unfortunately, that $12,000 a month the landlord allegedly promised, it's not written down anywhere. And so the attorney tells her the most Tyler can get from the landlord is minimum wage. That means in the eyes of the law, after you do the math, they still owe the landlord more than he owes them. So now, once again, Teresa is facing a potential eviction.
Potential being the key word here. As of this point, she is not actually being evicted. That will be important later.
Very important. During this time, Teresa's kids are adjusting to life in Gloucester. Or rather, some of them are.
Rylan does pretty well. She's currently 9 years old, and shortly after the move, she makes friends with a boy named Xavier, who's the same age as her and lives a few blocks away.
When they first met, she came up to our house, and they were inseparable after that.
This is Xavier's mom, Sue McGee.
If they're at our house, they play at our house, they eat at our house, they watch TV, they ride their bikes together, and then sometimes he would go down there, he'd eat dinner down there with them.
Sue actually just said something that will become really important later. It won't really mean anything yet, but just remember, we'll be coming back to this.
Everly, who is 4 years old at this point, is also doing fine. Azriel, who is 14, is going to summer football practice and wants to try out for the team in the fall. And then there's Josiah. Josiah turns 17 2 weeks before the move, and he is not happy. As far as he's concerned, his mom has just dragged him across the state to live in a place he does not know, away from all his friends. There's no money, they can't do the things he's used to doing.
So, I'm like, you can go get a job, Josiah, there's a bus. You have to give it a chance. We are starting our life over. When you start your life over again, we start over from scratch. We have to establish ourselves out here. You know, it's not something that you can just snap your fingers and do, you know? He didn't understand that because that's not what he wanted. He wanted to go back to where the trouble is. He wants to be there in the chaos of where I tried to escape from, to leave that path. You would think that with his record, he would want to leave there, right? Obviously not.
Josiah isn't happy, and he lets everyone know it.
So he started flipping out, saying that he was going to run away, he was going to do this or that, and he wanted to go back. And I'm like, Josiah, you can go back for a few weeks. It wasn't even supposed to be the whole summer. It was only for a few weeks. You can go back for a few weeks because you're not bringing what you did to me here. We're not doing that. Nobody knows me out here, and I want to keep it that way. I don't want to have to call the police on my child somewhere I just moved to. That's embarrassing. You know, I don't want my neighbors that don't even know me seeing the cops in my house 6 days after I move somewhere. That's embarrassing. I'm not like that.
So, just 1 week after arriving in Gloucester, Josiah goes to stay with his aunt, Jamie Boger, back in Butler County. And then, in mid-June, Azriel asks if he can go visit Jaylee.
Jaylee is Azriel's girlfriend, who also lives in Butler County.
I'm like, let me make sure that it's conducive because and appropriate, because I'm not going to be there, obviously. The dad was like, oh, I'm not going to let that happen, this and that happen, blah, blah, blah. We already, and he, I guess... They live with her aunt. It's like Jaylee's aunt and dad, so brother and sister. They have a big house. Her kids and his kids. I'm not quite sure of all that. I just know that there was going to be more than one adult there supervising, and I felt more comfortable enough to allow it to happen with the conversation that I had with him for an hour.
Azriel goes back to Butler. He and Teresa talk every day while he's there, until one day, Teresa can't get a hold of him.
This is June 24, 2022, one day before the removal. Teresa can't reach either of her sons, and she starts to worry she made a big mistake by letting them go back to Butler County.
Teresa later finds out Jaylee's dad had an argument with her, Jaylee has a health condition, she winds up in the hospital, and Azriel has to go to Jamie's house.
Again, Jamie is the aunt Josiah is staying with.
And Teresa is not happy. She's left this place behind because she thought it wasn't good for her kids. Now this has happened. She finally gets a hold of Azriel.
I'm like, I'm done. You're not going back over there and hanging out with those people. Obviously, I cannot trust anybody. And that's why we just moved away from there. So you and Josiah need to get ready to go. I am coming to get you both. Period. Of course. Oh my God, you would have thought the world was going to end. I don't care. I got my girls ready. They had baths. I got them blankets and pillows. We took snacks and we headed back to Butler County. Me knowing that I didn't even have enough gas to get back home after I did that, but I DoorDash, so I was going to DoorDash for money to get back home if I had to. I get there. I had already contacted the Monroe Police Department. Because of the chaos that was already occurring and that I knew it was going to be when I arrived. And it was late at night, but I wasn't going first thing in the morning and doing that. I wanted it taken care of then and there.
Teresa arrives at Jamie's house at 3 in the morning on June 25th. We are roughly 12 hours away from the removal.
Teresa gets Josiah and Azriel. There are 6 people in Teresa's car and only 5 seats. But a police officer says that's fine as long as Rylan and Everly are buckled in. They get as far as the first stop sign before Josiah bolts, just gets out of the car and runs off.
So Teresa calls the police again and goes to the station to wait.
I get to the police station and Josiah's calling me like, Mom, they're looking for me. I don't want to go back to jail. Just come back to the stop sign and pick me up. Come on, come on. So I go pick him back up at that same stop sign. One of the cops pulls up and I'm like, I got him. He came back to the stop sign because he doesn't want to go to jail. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? He was like, I mean, I guess just head back home. I'm like, okay. From the time that I got out of that neighborhood, I was called every name you can only imagine. I fucking hate you, you fucking stupid ass, cunt ass bitch. I'm going to ruin your life. I'm going to destroy your life as soon as we get back there. As soon as you take me back to that bum fuck, stick ass place, I'm going to destroy your life. I promise you that.
When they reach the Columbus area, Teresa stops at a gas station and asks Tyler, her boyfriend, to take over driving because her foot is going numb. Tyler doesn't have a license. Shortly after he gets behind the wheel, Josiah calls 911.
The caller is his son. He's arguing with his mom and her boyfriend.
She came and got us for no reason. I was living with my aunt for not even a month, making really good money, and she literally came and got me, and I couldn't even say goodbye to anybody. Like, that's how crazy she is.
How old are you?
I'm 17. I'll be 18 in less than a year.
Okay, did your mom put her hands on you?
Not yet, but I got threatened a bunch.
Okay. So your mom came and got you from your aunt. She's threatening to hit you, and you're mad, and you're in a green Jeep with 7 people and can't put your seatbelts on.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your name?
Josiah.
All right, we'll get somebody out there.
Tyler stops the car after Josiah makes the call, and Teresa goes back to driving. No police officer ever finds them or pulls them over. It's not even clear whether any officers are dispatched.
When they get back to Gloucester, Teresa's decided she's had enough of Josiah's behavior.
As soon as we pulled into the driveway and the boys got out of the vehicle, the girls were still in the car, we drove to the Gloucester Library. I got on the phone. I don't have very good service, and I didn't want him hearing what I was about to do.
Him being Josiah, she was going to shut off his phone service.
I am not going to pay somebody's cell phone bill being talked to like that, period. I had been paying it since he's had the phone. Are you going to pay your kid's phone bill if they're talking to you like that? No, I'm not doing it. I don't have to. You have money in your pocket, right? Pay it yourself. You want a phone? Get it turned on yourself. I'm not paying it.
When Teresa gets back to the house from the library, Josiah comes storming out.
Go turn my damn phone back on right now.
Teresa pulls out her phone and starts recording. She's still in the car. Everly is in the back seat. Josiah is standing just outside the passenger door.
Go turn my phone on right now. That is illegal.
No, it's not.
Yes, the fuck
is. I pay the bill. No, it's not.
It is illegal because I had another phone turned off.
Oh, that's.
And you didn't take me to go get it. Your
that's
son
tough.
Has no clothes, no underwear.
It's tough.
He has 4.
It's tough.
I'm not playing with you, Teresa.
That's Josiah hitting the passenger window with a hammer.
Bitch, you're crazy as fuck. You're on drugs. You're a bad mom. You've never been a good mom.
Hey!
At the end of the video, Tyler runs up and Josiah leaps back. Tyler steps back too. Teresa shouts, "Hey!" And the video ends. Azriel comes out of the house carrying a bag of clothes. Josiah tells him to follow, and the two walk off down the alley.
Well, at that point in time, I collapse in the driveway, and I'm just bawling my eyes out. And I watched that video that I took multiple times, and I posted it on social media. I said, what, please, someone, I beg you to tell me, what do you do at this point?
Just to clarify, Teresa's talking about Josiah here.
What do you do when all you want is your family together, but you're being talked to like this by your 17-year-old son? Please, someone, anyone, I beg you to tell me what to do with him. Please.
Josiah and Azriel walk to the Gloucester Public Library.
He was screaming and crying and stuff.
This is Azriel.
And then this girl came over to us and was like, do y'all need help? Like, what's going on?
It's the librarian. She's checking in on these two kids who are clearly upset, which is exactly what she's supposed to do.
My brother was like, my mom's abusive, she's on drugs, da da da, and basically like telling her a whole lot. And then guy didn't step up because like he's intimidating and like I didn't know what he was gonna do to me. So like I didn't like really interview with that because it didn't like make no sense to me. She was like, do you need me to call anybody? I was like, no. And then Josiah was like, yeah, yeah. Can you please call somebody? And she was like, yeah, I can get a hold of a caseworker. And I was like, a caseworker. And then Josiah was like, that would be great.
The librarian calls a local behavioral health organization. A caseworker comes out and talks to Josiah and Azriel. And then, based on what the boys tell her, she calls Children's Services. Children's Services sends its own caseworker out, a woman named Jaclyn McGackie.
There are a few different accounts of exactly what was said next. The version we're giving here is summarized from the caseworker activity log. This is an official document that Children's Services maintains for every case.
And it's about as close as we ever come to seeing what the agency's internal thought process was.
Josiah tells Jaclyn that on the drive home that morning, Tyler was driving at high speeds, swerving in and out of traffic, and slamming on his brakes. He says he was fighting with his mom after they returned home because there was no food in the house and the children were all hungry. He says that when he was knocking on his mom's car window, Tyler, quote, lunged at him with a hammer and swung it at him, unquote. And he says that earlier in the morning, Tyler threatened to get a gun and shoot him.
Azriel, according to the activity log, says Tyler is, quote, dangerous and had spent time in prison, unquote, for attempted murder. We should note that Tyler did serve time in prison, but for a residential burglary, not attempted murder. Azriel also says they haven't had much food since moving to Gloucester, that Tyler is mean to him, and that he isn't sleeping well because he's so afraid.
Then there's a bit more from Josiah. He says their mom, quote, often brought different men to their home and moved them in, unquote. And that, quote, food insecurity, different men, domestic violence, and substance abuse was constantly within the home, unquote. And he says Teresa often tries to get him to buy weed.
And that's it. Don't worry too much if you didn't catch all of that. This isn't the last time we'll be going through these allegations. We should also mention that Josiah later denies saying all of this, not to us directly, but to Teresa in a text. Azriel, for his part, denies making the statements that were attributed to him, but he says Josiah really did claim Tyler was violent, Teresa was negligent, and so forth.
In other words, Azriel acknowledges that what's in the activity log is what the caseworker was told when she met with him and his brother.
And we couldn't talk directly to the caseworker, Jaclyn McGackie, because she's prohibited from discussing the case.
We should also mention that Josiah tells the caseworker that his aunt Jamie's house is a safe place for them to go. This is the house he was staying in before Teresa came to get him and Azriel, a place, it seems, Josiah did not want to leave and would like to get back to.
Now, all of this transpires over the course of about 3 hours. That's from the time the boys leave the house to the time they're done talking to Jaclyn. During this time, Teresa has gotten herself together, she's tended to Rylan and Everly, and now, because her boys still aren't home, she puts her daughters in the car and goes to find the Gloucester police station. It's closed, so she calls dispatch.
Teresa tells the dispatcher about everything that's happened and says she has a video of her son attacking her car with a hammer. The dispatcher sends a couple of sheriff's deputies to Teresa's house. But Jaclyn gets there first.
Remember, Teresa just left with her girls to find the Gloucester police station. She gets back, Rylan gets out of the car, and Teresa goes to unbuckle Everly. Then Rylan comes running back.
Mom, there's a girl out front that wants to talk to you. I'm like, okay. And I'm like getting my stuff together out of the car. I'm gotta unbuckle my daughter. We get out of the vehicle and we go walking to the front of the house. This woman does not tell me who she is. She doesn't tell me anything. She says, do you know where your boys are? And I'm like, no, but I just called the police because they've been gone for a little while. And I'm trying to press charges on my son for what he just did to my car and tried to attack me. And she's like, well, your boys are at the library, but I have some concerns. And I'm like, you have some concerns.
Again, we couldn't talk to Jacelyn to get her version of how this conversation went.
She was like, well, I think that it would be best, and my supervisor feels like it would be best, if we sent your kids to a relative's house for the evening or to foster care. Now, at that point, we're talking about the boys. So I'm like, okay, first of all, I don't know who the fuck you are. You haven't told me your name.
Teresa is adamant that Jacelyn never identifies herself.
Who is your supervisor? Where is she at? I said, you're not taking my children anywhere until a police officer arrives here. I said, I just moved here. I don't even know where the hell I am, and I don't know who you are. So until you can prove that to me, you're not doing shit. And she said, I'm talking about all of your children. I said, fuck you, bitch. You're not taking my kids nowhere. I take my children back to my car. We get into my car, and we leave.
We went over this with Teresa several times over the 8 months we investigated, trying to see if her story changed, if there was any evidence that she was lying to us or embellishing. If there was, we never found it. And like David said, we tried to get Jacelyn's side, but couldn't because of the confidentiality rules surrounding these cases. We also asked Children's Services to identify any parts of Teresa's story they disputed, not telling us what their version was, just indicating what parts, if any, they felt were incorrect. And they declined, again citing confidentiality rules.
The reason this is also important is because Teresa's decision to drive off was actually disastrous for her. Which raises the question, did she understand what the consequences of driving off would be?
It really doesn't seem like she did. And arguably, that's something that should have been made clear to her.
Well, at least someone should have explained to Teresa what her options were at this point. But that's something we'll cover more in the next episode.
Now, Teresa's version is the only version of this conversation we have. It's possible that Jacelyn did identify herself. Maybe Teresa missed it or didn't process it. On the other hand, many of the experts we talked to said it wouldn't surprise them if Jacelyn had just failed to identify herself or didn't do so effectively. Maybe the conversation escalated too quickly. Who knows? They said it wouldn't have been the first time they've seen a caseworker deviate from protocol.
In any case, Teresa is now driving around Gloucester in a panic. She doesn't know what to do, so she calls Justin, her ex-boyfriend, and tells him to come to Athens County.
Remember, Justin is Rylan and Everly's dad. The girls are with Teresa in the car, and Teresa wants Justin to come get them because she thinks someone is trying to take them from her.
Justin gets about halfway there from Butler County before he gets a hold of Children's Services. He is told he doesn't need to keep driving to Athens. The girls are being placed somewhere else. They won't be released to him. He turns around and goes home.
Now, there is one other person who saw Jacelyn at Teresa's house, Rylan's friend Xavier.
He came in the house and said he was crying and upset because he said somebody was down there trying to take the kids away from Teresa.
This is Xavier's mom, Sue McGee, again.
And so I was like, is it Children's Services? And he said he didn't know. So I waited just a little bit, and then I messaged Teresa, and I asked her if she was okay and if the kids were okay. And she said, yeah, she was worried that it would upset Xavier to be there to see if anything was going on, so she sent him home. And then shortly after that, she showed up at our house, and she was trying to explain to me what was going on, and that the lady was there, but she didn't know who she was or why she was even trying to take the kids.
Teresa comes to Sue's house and explains what happened. Sue already suspects the mysterious lady is from Children's Services.
You don't want to get yourself in deeper trouble. I said, I would hate to see you lose the girls on something stupid.
She says Teresa should call dispatch again and tell the deputies where she is so they can get everything sorted out. Teresa calls, and the deputies arrive not long after.
The girls, you can look at them and tell that they were not being beaten or abused in any way. And when they're at my house, they're total angels. They're very polite. They're always fed. They're always clean. I would have never thought that they would have really taken them. Or I would have gone a different route with that.
We have the dispatch call log, and we can see how much time elapsed between Teresa's two calls to dispatch. The first from her home, the second from Sue's. It's about 45 minutes. Bearing in mind that Teresa meets Jacelyn as soon as she ends the first call, we can infer that that's about how much time has passed since their meeting at her front door.
So Rylan went into the house with Xavier and was watching a movie, and they were eating a snack, and the little one was in the back seat asleep. And the cops came. She explained to them what was going on and that she didn't know who the lady was and why she was there to take the kids away from her.
Sue just cannot believe that Children's Services would move so abruptly to take Teresa's kids from her.
I said, there's got to be a bigger picture. I said, they wouldn't just take your kids away from you. I said, but usually, even with it being a weekend, that they would do an investigation first, talk to the girls, see what's going on, talk to the boys, see what's going on, talk to you, get a story, and go from there. I said, but usually they wouldn't just yank them from you.
What Sue describes is how the process is supposed to work, but that's not what happens in Teresa's case. Instead, Jacelyn arrives a few minutes after the deputies with a signed order from the Athens County Juvenile Court judge to take all four of Teresa's children into the temporary custody of Athens County Children's Services. In other words, it's over. The decision has been made. The kids have to go with Jacelyn. Sue goes to tell Rylan.
I went in and I told her, I said, we tried what we could. She said, can you just keep us? And I said, I tried. We tried. I said, they won't allow it. I said, you do have to go.
Rylan is old enough to understand what's going on, old enough to be scared about what happens next.
I was trying to reassure Rylan that she was going to be okay because, again, Athens County's got the best children's service people around. And she said she didn't care. She said, well, she's nine. What if they murder me? What if they beat me? Or what if they lock me in a room somewhere? She's seen way too much TV. And I said, that's not gonna happen. I said, you will be safe. You will be well taken care of until you can get back with your mom. I said, they're the nicest foster care around here that you can get.
Sue doesn't know it yet, but she'll come to regret those words. And as for Teresa, she just has to watch as Jacelyn drives off with her children.
She was in our driveway for a little bit. I went in and took a shower because, like I said, I was leaving. So I was in there, took a shower, I got dressed and everything, and she was still
at the end of the
out
driveway.
At the end of our driveway.
But it was maybe 10, 15 minutes and she left.
In the next episode, we'll unpack why everything unraveled for Teresa so quickly. We'll look at how Children's Services justifies removing her children in court, what the process is supposed to look like, and why the system is struggling to follow its own rules.
There are lots of things that are supposed to happen to prevent cases like Teresa's, but they don't always work. That's next time on 150 Days. Days is a production of WOUB Public Media. The podcast was written and produced by Teopek Suzuki and David Forster. Adam Rich is the audio engineer. Music by Caitlin Krause and Brad Swinarski. To read the digital version of this story, go to woub.org/150-days.